Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby is sponsored by Bet99 Sportsbook. Every game starts at Bet99. We are responsible gambling. Ontario only. Like and subscribe to the Unfiltered podcast with a chance to win a lot of fun things, especially coming up. I got the book. But without further ado, a guy that has written a lot more books than I and has a further education, I'm sure, than my grade 11 and a half twice, Russ Cohen. He does everything. He's like a chameleon. Prospects, NHL, Sirius XM, NHL, author. He does Phillies. He does football. He does it all. He is a good buddy and a guy I lean on a lot and a guy I like to either bitch and moan and complain about our Jets or validate why we are Jets fans. Russ, welcome to Unfiltered.
Yeah, always fun to commiserate with you, Matt. I agree. And congrats on your book. It's always an amazing accomplishment. It is.
It's something that I wanted to do for a long time, and it came to fruition, honestly, just because I never had the time. As you know, it takes a lot of time, lot of thought, a lot of preparation, and a lot of thinking going back into the memory bank for myself. And you know, you go back to as a kid for myself and trying to remember stories and then interview people that you know that were such a big part of your life. So it was it was a lot of fun. I'm excited to get on the road, meet a lot of fans from a lot of different cities that I was at. When what made you want to start writing? And you have various different avenues that you've done. Mine was an autobiography, so it makes it, I think, a little bit easier because you're writing about yourself.
Right. It's funny. I always had the thought in my head, but honestly, trying to do the first book is always hard. And so we were waiting on a Ranger book that we were working on, 100 Ranger Greats, and we got put off for like a year. So when that got put off for a year, I still kind of had the bug. So then I put out a book called Strike Three with former MLB player Nico Riesgo, played for the Expos. And you know what? And that sort of lit the fire. I was like, okay, you know, I could do this. We did the Ranger book and then we kept doing them. And, you know, as you know, it could take up to a year to do a book and it's a lot of time. Like the biggest thing I always tell people is even if you think you're going to write a book, you need to write about it every day. If you don't, it'll eventually overtake you, especially if you get a hard deadline too.
Hard deadlines are huge. And, you know, I think as a hockey player, it's just show up. And I do really well with structure. Yes. I found the hardest thing with, you know, I wrote every day, like you said, if I remembered a story and I literally went through every team and I wrote Anaheim and Buffalo, I did it in alphabetical order. So if I just saw a story came up in my head or I was in a certain city, I'm like, oh, I tell this story. Well, I'd write it down in just a jotted piece of paper. So when I got back, I would write about it and write a chapter, whether it be that or a story or coaches along the way, because you forget so much stuff and then it comes in. But if you don't write it down, that's paramount to having structure for it.
Yeah, it's a big deal. And you could lose it. Like, you know, you just you may never remember it or recover it. You know, a big thing a lot of times when you're doing books and you're also doing interviews is you kind of want to interview guys while, you know, because remember, you're retired. You've been retired for a while. So people that you're calling are older. And as you get older, your memory gets a little fuzzier. And so you really want to call people that you want to interview for your book as soon as you can, because you just never know. Like the oldest guy I ever interviewed with was Edgar Laprade. And he won the 1940 Calder, I believe. And so he was like 95 when I called him. Luckily, he was pretty sharp. But I had a list. Like I was like, all right, I've got to call some of these guys soon, right away. And you just can't put it off. And a lot of times we all tend to procrastinate.
Well, when you do an autobiography, the one thing I got is that fucking story in there. Is this one, is this night in Chicago? And I'm not burying any guys I played with unless I didn't like you. And it's nothing, listen, no one's going to jail. There's probably some stories out there that they don't want out there. And a couple are my friends, but they're funny stories. Listen, the biggest story.
What publishers expect when you do a book. They don't want just the okay stuff. They want the good stuff.
We were in Chicago one night, and it was a night out with Dennis Rodman and Chris Chelios and one of my teammates. People out there, you're going to have to buy the book if you want to get the full story. But makes out with a stripper in Chicago. Comes back, and Dennis Rodman is sitting beside myself and Brad May. So Brad May is not the guy, and says, "Hey, you know, Mimi has a bigger dick than all of us here, right?" So we were at a pretty funny club. That guy did. I said, "It is in there." But yes, no one's going to jail from the things I say. But there's some embarrassing stories, some funny stories, and stuff behind the scenes with coaches.
You have to be honest. People could tell if you're not honest when you write a book. That's the biggest thing. Authenticity is the key.
Paramount. Absolutely. I want to jump right in, and I want to get to what you do and where people can listen to you, read you, do all that. But Philly is crazy right now.
Listen,
you got the Eagles undefeated. You have the Phillies going to the World Series. Big, big underdogs. I work for Bet99. I don't wear this shirt very often because it's a little tighter than it should be. But let's talk MLB. I was just in Houston. I just flew home last night. I'm actually tired as shit because Air Canada, thank you again, 17-hour trip because of cancellations. Houston is jacked. This is coming from a few – They've had a hell of a run.
It's a fun city. I went to college there. It's a fun city.
And I've actually bet you're going to get to Bernie's bets in this series later on. Heavy favorites for the series. The Astros are minus 186. And for those people that don't know that out there, you're almost laying $100 to win 50, 200 to lay to win 100, almost 2-to-1 odds. How can the Phillies beat the Astros?
Well, I'll go back. I mean, when I was 6 years old, the 1969 Mets were probably that same underdog to the Orioles, and they won. How can you do it? Well, you could do it with crazy fans. They have that. Check. They do have a good home. Check. They have a good home field advantage right now. It's really one of the, you know, in baseball, we kind of like throw it out there like, hey, it doesn't mean much anymore. But it does seem to fire up their key players. It does seem to fire up Bryce Harper. It does seem to fire up Rhys Hoskins. So if it fires up those guys, it matters, right? Because those are their power hitters. The Phillies have good power. The one thing everybody was going to be worried about if they made the playoffs was those two guys and Schwarber. Now, I still think Schwarber's flawed as a leadoff hitter, but he's got great power too. When you have three power guys like that in the lineup, if they're all going, it's dangerous. And right now they're all going, but they could all, you know, drop too and just, you know, go 0-for-15 and you lose the series. It is like that. But the other thing that they have is hustle. They've all of a sudden been really hustling on the base paths. They take the extra base. They move runners along. They do things that they didn't have to do in the regular season. When all of a sudden you get into the playoffs, it's the same as the NHL. The game changes a little. And Rob Thompson's done a good job of that. And so I think the other thing that's the bugaboo for them is fielding. Their fielding isn't great. And so that's the one thing where it could hurt him. Rhys Hoskins is a horrific first baseman. As good as he is a hitter, he's worse as a first baseman. And they do tend to throw the ball around a little bit in the infield. You got to worry about that with the Astros because they're very fundamentally sound. Say what you want about Dusty Baker. Say what you want about his gardening gloves. He knows baseball. And both these managers know baseball.
Yeah.
Like, this is a good matchup of guys who really know things. The bullpen is just unbelievable for the Astros. It's just so deep. That's a big edge because the Phillies, like, you know, maybe they use Zach Eflin. Maybe they'll go to Sir Anthony Dominguez. But they really haven't zeroed in on one guy. And they've been kind of mixing and matching with that. That's a little dangerous. The Astros don't do that. The Astros have Verlander, who's practically an immortal at this point. If you notice, there's a subtle thing that also happened. As a Met fan, I know a lot about Zach Wheeler, and I didn't want the Mets to trade him. And there was always a lot of talk on the inside that he was kind of like fragile, and I didn't buy it. He wasn't throwing a lot of innings for the Mets. Maybe like 160 or 70 was his max. Then last year, he did max out on innings. The thing about Wheeler is, though, he's not going to be able to throw three times in a seven-game series. Yeah. So they knew that. Everybody knows that. And so they moved him to the number two. They've got Nola starting as the number one. That's smart because Nola can do that. He has that kind of arm. They've got to win these first two games on the road. Like, it's a paramount thing. And look, teams have won the World Series losing two. The 86 Mets lost the first two. They came back and won. But I do think the only way you could sort of get the Astros off their game is by having your two best pitchers win, because otherwise I think it becomes a much bigger chore.
You bring up unbelievable points, and it brings me to my next question. So you led right into it for me, because when the Yankees went down 0-2, it was curtains. There was no they were coming back. And how important is it for the Phillies to get to their pitchers early? And how big a concern is it that this team just blew away the Yankees, who can hit, who have power, and Altuve hasn't even shown up yet?
No. I mean, they're amazing. The kid at shortstop, the rookie, his name is escaping me. He's had a tremendous year. Is it Baez, I think? He's been great. The thing that the Phillies can do is they've been good at driving up the pitch counts. They've been good at running long counts. They're going to have to do that with Verlander. But Verlander is a monster, too. At this point, you know, he'll go 120 if he has to in a playoff game. So you can only get away with that just so much. But I do think some of that being selective early in the game matters, because then you're going to ask Verlander to have to dial it up in the seventh inning, maybe in a key spot. So I think that's a big part of it.
Here's what I know. Everyone in the world, except for the people in Houston, because they are nuts for their Astros. I mean, nuts for their Astros. It was a great listen. Philly fans to me are the best. I've said this over and over. I wish I would have been a Philadelphia Flyer. I love Philadelphia. I actually want to do a book signing in Philadelphia.
You should
do it. Like a dunk tank or a punch tank, whatever it is.
They'd love to boo you here. They did.
I love it. And I love it. I was going through pictures yesterday, just returning emails and that. And my wife's like, oh, I've never seen this picture. And it's me giving it to the Phillies fans and some guy in the stands with fuck you, Barna baby. And I love it. I love Philadelphia. I got to get to an Eagles game. Eagles 6-0. How crazy is this place going for their Eagles right now?
I mean, it's crazy. They're talking about an undefeated season. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm going to tell you something. I know. I think Jalen Hurts has done better than anybody thought. That's fine. Give him credit. He deserves the credit. Growing up a Jets fan, knowing about the Giants my entire life, knowing that the Giants have had more success, there's one thing the Giants have always done. Even have they, when they've gone into the gutter, like they've been in the gutter the last 3 years. But the problem is, when they come out of it, they always have a year you're never expecting. And they do that like once a decade. And this is it. And I tried to tell a guy in local Philly radio, hey, this may not make sense to you. And this is before the Giants won this week. But I'm telling you, this is the kind of year where all of a sudden they are coming out of nowhere. Nobody thought they were going to do anything, and they're doing it. And he's like, oh, come on. They're not going to keep winning. And I'm like, listen, they are going to be a threat to the Eagles for that division. And I still do believe the Giants are going to be a threat to the Eagles for that division, because Daniel Jones looks better because they're playing to his strengths. I don't think he's a horrible quarterback. He's not a great quarterback, but you know, his running ability is good, and there's some things that he does well. The Giants coaching is so much better. Like, it's been a gong show. The coaching and the front office has literally been a gong show there for like 3 years. It's not anymore.
Yeah. I think if you look at the weapons now, especially AJ Brown, DeMonta Smith, Hurts is coming into his own. He's playing to MVP caliber. You look at their defense, 105 points against in six games. I mean, you only give up 105 points in six games, you're going to win most of your games. 6-0. Are they that good? They're a good team. I never saw it. I'm glad you saw it. I didn't see the Giants. Now, Saquon hasn't been Saquon. Saquon hasn't been healthy.
But he doesn't have to be now?
But he's been really good for them. He makes – you talk to playing within a quarterback's strengths. And this goes back to Baltimore with me, with Flacco.
Right.
He didn't lose them championships. No. And some quarterbacks do.
Yeah.
He didn't win them championships. And we can go
to Chris Osgood. It's the Trent Dilfer argument.
We can go to Chris Osgood in Detroit.
Right.
You know, he was just good enough. Is he a Hall of Famer? Not in my eyes. But he won multiple Stanley Cups and didn't lose them games. And I think that's really important when you talk about Daniel Jones. Never going to be a Hall of Famer. He's never going to be a great, great quarterback in this league. And listen, they didn't even pick up his fifth year's option. So for them to be 5-1, it comes down to coaching. And I don't think anyone's done a better job than Dable.
No, I agree. And look, Jeff Hostetler had a couple of years. You know, like there's always a time where things are clicking right. And look, and the Eagles have so many things going for them. They do. I get it. And you named a lot of them. But Jalen Hurts is still not the most accurate passer. And if there is a pass rush on him, we'll see. Like, they, you know, they've had good wins here. I don't think they're at the level of Kansas City. I think they're probably like in that next tier somewhere through 6 through 10, as far as like the best teams in the league. That's where I think they are.
I don't think they're as good as KC, but I think they can beat KC.
Yeah, listen, they're capable.
KC's defense at times is just, they'll give up those big plays.
It is, but here's what I always come down to. I always come down to this. You're probably right, and defense is important, but when you get in a playoff game, is Jalen Hurts going to match Patrick Mahomes touchdown for touchdown? Because that's what it comes down to in this league. It always comes down to that. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, Mahomes comes out on top. I get it. He hasn't every year, but that's what it's going to come down to if it matches up.
Whoever has the ball, I think when you look at a lot of those playoff games, especially, I don't look at it as much in the regular season. I you know, you look at their track record.
Of course, that would be the Super Bowl, but yeah, whatever.
But when you get into the playoffs, who do you trust with the ball for the last drive? Who's got the ball last, and who can punch it in? Whether it's a field goal or a touchdown, and we saw probably the best case last year with the Bills and the Chiefs just going bang, bang, and Allen and Mahomes. And listen, he wins a coin flip, and you know it, game over.
Right.
You're not even questioning it.
Right.
Like it's game over. Can't believe, by the way, Green Bay getting 11 points against the Bills. And I think the Bills cover. I think it's just going to
I think they cover too. This is the worst I've seen Aaron Rodgers. I get it. He's probably going to get a little better this year, but there's a lot of discontent. It seems like between him and the front office still about who's around him, and there's not enough players around him. But you know what? At the end of the day, you still got to make those receivers better. And he's not doing it. And he's still pining away for, you know, Adams. And it's like, listen, he's gone.
He's not coming back.
He's not coming back. The Bills are going to knock you in the mouth. Josh Allen is a dual threat. I think they cover too.
Yeah, your ex, Aaron Rodgers, and that's Devontae Adams. He's your ex. He's banging someone else now.
Right.
He's still
pining away for him. It's unbelievable.
I watched him on the Pat McAfee show the other day. Maybe it was yesterday. Literally, he looks like, just give me my money. I'm just gonna take my money, and I'm just gonna roll into it. I'm just gonna complain. It was actually so annoying to listen to him. And he was he's very well spoken. He's very articulate in the way that he speaks.
And he's a deep thinker. I get it. Yeah. I give him credit.
Yeah, and he throws jabs without them being jabs. But if you read between the lines, you know, they're jabs. Listen, I'm not talking about Green Bay. They don't deserve it for what we've talked. Bills deserve all that. That leads me to the New York Jets, something we both love, and we text back and forth all the time, either our discontent or our jubilation. Well, it's all jubilation. My biggest bet of the year was over 5.5 wins, and I never thought that I could get to there in week 8, especially with the strength of schedule at the start of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be a liar if I thought that too, but that's why they play the games. We sort of like were watching things happen, and we were annoyed with Robert Saleh the first couple of games of the year, and it looked like it was going to be a problem again this year. But then things started to happen. You know, they started to use Breece Hall more, Garrett Wilson. You know, it's odd and rare that I'm really good with hockey prospects. I'm not as good with football prospects, but those are two guys I really wanted for the Jets. I was vocal with you about it, and they have been difference makers. Unfortunately, Hall's out for the year now. But they have been difference makers. Just, you know, it's funny. Even if Wilson is not catching 100 yards a game, they're paying attention to him, and it's making the jobs of everybody else easier, except for maybe Elijah Moore, who's acting like an idiot. But he's going to be in this week. We'll see how many targets he gets. But the thing about Zach Wilson is this. Everybody still wants to say he's not that good. I'm not willing to say that yet. I see improvement because he's not throwing interceptions. One of the biggest things in this league is don't turn the ball over in any case. And so interceptions are always killers. You have more than 2 a game, you're probably losing, right? Yeah. Unless you're a Tom Brady and you could throw 5 touchdowns. Wilson can't do that. I don't even care if Wilson gets 300 yards a game. To me, he can get 150 yards a game if he does it right. And they have enough things going on, a good defense, everything else, where they can make up for that. But what I still have noticed, and people, I don't know, it's even Jet fans sort of have PTSD with this. Wilson's done a very good job in the fourth quarter. He seems to be a better quarterback in the fourth quarter. He seems to rise to the occasion. He may not be throwing touchdown, 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 but he seems to get the first downs that he needs, and he seems to pull off the runs that he needs, and it keeps the chains going, and, you know, it's getting them wins. And their defense has been very impressive. Like, this is the first time we've seen a pass rush in a decade.
And we didn't see it early on, the first couple games. No. Our linebackers, obviously, we need some work there.
Kawan Alexander is sort of coming up now.
He's coming. He's playing much better. But it all comes down to pass rush. If you can't rush the quarterback, and that's why, like, Zach Wilson, essentially, last year is a write-off. It's a write-off. You're throwing from your ass the whole time.
Right.
And if you're throwing from your ass the whole time and you have no protection, you're not going to have success. I don't care if you throw Dan Marino back there.
No.
If he only has a second and a half to throw the ball and he's getting hit on the blind side, you're like, you have zero chance. Listen, we get Mekhi Becton. I want one more year. I don't know where your thoughts are with him. I'll give him one more year and cut bait if he can't.
I mean, I'll give him a year, but I think he's washed anyhow. Like, I just think he's almost at the point where he's washed, which is sad because I didn't want to draft him because I knew about the conditioning issues. Yeah. And I'll just leave it at that. All that said, he had talent, and, you know, whether he can come back from this, I don't know. The rest of their offensive line's great. It's really filled in. Brown has done tremendous. You know, Tucker, it's a shame he got hurt.
Yeah.
I hear they're going after Tonsil. If they could get him, that would be massive, because one more veteran like that in this line could be enough to put them on the path for a playoff, because I liked the move with getting a running back from the Jaguars. I'm sure Joe Douglas called up Doug Peterson or texted him. He probably speaks to him a lot, and he probably said he's not using him. So, hey, that was good. They got another good running back to go along with what they have. That's good. You know, the other thing is, look, Sauce has been unbelievable. I mean, even not getting pass interferences called against him, he seems to know the right time to hold guys when there's, you know, the arm play going on. When they get to the end zone, he still hasn't given up a touchdown. He did give up one the first game and it got called back.
Yeah.
But he still hasn't given up a touchdown. He's been great. DJ Reed, we have to give credit to Joe Douglas. That was a hell of a pickup.
Unreal.
He's been picking up steam ever since like week three. Like, he's really, really been great. So that's another one where I'm like, wow. And we have a field goal kicker. Like, the field goal kicker is important, because when Salah, the other last game, when they went in the fourth quarter and they decided to get a field goal that would put them up four, I was all for it. Now, in the past, I might not have been for it, because we had field goal kickers that were just lousy. Eddie Pinheiro, all these guys were lousy. But you know what? They made that kick. They got another kick. And that was enough to pretty much put the game out of reach, even if some weird play, something odd was going to happen. So now I feel confident against the Patriots. I don't care if they have Zappe in there. I don't care if they have Mac Jones. I think they have chaos going on at the quarterback position, and Belichick created that chaos last week. And I think for the first time, like, this is like New England coming in, and like, Salah could really just, if he plays the right defense, you know, if they play the same defense they've been playing, I think they need to blitz a little bit. I do, especially if Zappe's in there, because he's not going to be used to picking it up. But basically, their secondary coverage makes everything on the team better. Like, because if you have 2 seconds, and if everybody's covered within 2 seconds, quarterback's doing his checkdowns, and all of a sudden, now even, you know, like, Mosley can make a tackle. Like, a lot of other things can happen. But I will tell you, what really has annoyed me, and I can't believe it was Kevin Burkhardt, who's a New York guy, used to do Mets coverage. When they were doing the Fox game a couple weeks ago, they were acting like this is like a coming out party for Quinn and Williams. And it's like, listen, Quinn and Williams was great last year.
Yeah.
I'm sorry if you didn't do any homework and didn't want to like watch any of the first 3 or 4 games before you did your coverage. But Quinn and Williams has been great for a little while now. And it's just weird how sometimes things like that are late to happen. Or is it just because it's the Jets? You know, I think that's a part of it too.
Well, that's why I brought this, because my wife was sick of seeing me buy jersey after jersey after jersey, and 2 years later, they're gone. Quinnen Williams has been so good. He was good last year, but he's taken it at another level. And we've seen, whether it's rookies of the week or offensive players of the week, and Breece Hall, I feel so bad for him, because we loved that pick. Essentially, we had four first rounders. The only guy that really hasn't made an impact yet is Jermaine Johnson. Yeah. But I still hold out that
he listened. I hold out some hope. I felt like he was going to be a little bit of a home run swing, but that's fine.
Yeah, and that's okay. I mean, you look at Sauce. Garrett Wilson's going to be sud. Sauce, I think, it could end up being one of the best. I mean, he's so lanky, as all the attributes.
He's probably an all-pro this year if things stay tracked. He might break Revis's record for passes defended, which is crazy, but I don't even want to go there yet.
Oh, I'm not getting rid of my Revis Island jersey. Yeah. That one's too good. I actually was in Houston. We went to this bar, which was a Kansas City bar, but there was a Jets table. So I kind of maneuvered over behind him. I had my Jets jersey on. The guy had a Revis jersey. And I think the next one I get is a Sauce. Listen, it's number one. It's pretty simple. Yeah. And he ain't going anywhere.
No.
Anywhere.
No, he's not going anywhere. I'll tell you, though, back when I was in college days, I went to a game at the Astrodome and the Jets lost. They lost to the Oilers, Earl Campbell and company. Like, it was just like, come on, man. They had the lead, too. They did. And I think they were up by like a touchdown, too. So this is a different year. Like, this isn't the same old Jets. We could finally at least say things that used to happen to them are not happening to them anymore. Like the bad things.
And listen, I hate people in the betting world that, oh my God, they haven't beat Miami or New England in 14 straight appearances. These guys don't care.
No.
Half this team wasn't part of that.
No.
They haven't seen anything.
It means nothing to them. They say it in every interview. Like, it's just telling you.
They're like, we don't care, man. Like, if I played on Buffalo Sabres and we had like a new guy, like new team, I'm like, this isn't our team. We just brought 9 new guys in.
Yeah, that's the one thing. Like, look, I'm a media person too, but I do talk to a lot of players too. And there is a fine line. And I do think sometimes the media gets too stuck on history. And I like history too. I like bringing it up when I think it's valid. But you're right. There's not enough guys here to think that the history is valid. Even ESPN the other day was like, well, the Jets have lost 13 out of 14 against divisional opponents. It's like, yeah, but they're 1-0 this year. Yeah. That's what matters. They're 1-0 this year. They're going for 2-0. This week. That's all that matters, because they have to understand it's a different group and it's a different thing going on. And maybe LaFleur is opening up the playbook more. But I will tell you, I think he made a mistake last week. If you noticed, when they had that meeting a couple of days before the game, LaFleur told the national media that, hey, I think Wilson had 16 games under his belt. We're now going to open the playbook up more to him, and he's going to have to rise to the occasion.
Yeah.
They were throwing the ball too much at the beginning of the game. Like, they went completely off the game plan, which they should never do, and definitely should not do that against New England. I don't care if you've opened up more of the playbook and you feel like you can flex your muscles. Do it as the game goes on, but keep to that ground and pound game plan, because I have to tell you, there has never – the only time the Jets have ever, ever – benefited from like a pass first game was with Namath and O'Brien. That's it. Every other year that they've made it to championship games or just before that, they had quarterbacks that were smart enough to complete the passes they needed to. Even Vinny, Vinny was really good, but he wasn't a bomber. He occasionally, but not much.
He was more of a Joe Flacco.
Yeah, he was more of a Joe Flacco type. All those guys did that game, and then the Jets would do it with the running game and with good defense, and that's what they're finally doing, and they can't get off that track. And it's going to be a problem for New England. It is.
Kenny O'Brien to Al Toon, I used to love. I mean, absolutely love. And yes, and I'm with you. Breece Hall has made this team different. First of all, you're keeping other teams' offenses off the field. You're tiring defenses. Michael Carter as a second back is phenomenal.
He's the first back, and that's fine. He is capable. You know what I'm kind of hoping? That Johnson now gets inserted more as a receiving back. Yeah. I do think there's value there that's not been sort of like touched yet.
Let's get another Philly.
All right.
Good start. Torts. Listen, I wasn't a Torts fan as a coach. Yeah. I like Torts the person. Mm-hmm. Torts is a guy that likes dogs more than people. He's
said, oh yeah, himself. I always say that
he loves dogs and doesn't really care for people all that much away from the rink. Torts is one of the kindest, gentlest guys. Listen, he could be an asshole at the rink and make it miserable to come. And I also think he does play it up. I think some of the times he plays it up just to be an ass, and have this persona almost like a Belichick,
right?
But he's a good coach and he puts time in.
Yeah, you don't win all those games by being bad.
No. And this is I've always said he took Tampa that was a bad team and then had infusion after, he would be, he reminds me of like a Kevin Constantine in the fact that very knowledgeable, very dedicated. He's gonna ride you hard. And if you don't like it, you're out. You don't play his style, you're gone. And right. I think you look at Vancouver and some of the places, you know, the teams he takes over, Columbus, not that talented. They come through and they play much better than they are. And they had some upsets because of it. He's walking into Philadelphia. Philly is sick of losing. And they have deep pockets. They're able to spend the cap every single year. And I said, it's either going to be a match made in heaven, or this is going to be Brad Pitt, Angelina part 9, where it just is absolutely awful.
Chip Kelly.
Chip Kelly. Yeah.
Kelly. No, I look at it like this. I was just at practice today and Torts got mad. He was flinging around the F word towards the end of practice, waving his arm like crazy. You know, we're watching, we're not sure what he's zoned in on that he doesn't like. And when he benched Konecny and Hayes the other day, we're still not sure. The guys know at this point, but nobody knew that day and nobody really knows now, right? So you're right. Sometimes he does things because he wants to make a point. So he did in that game, and there was no chance they were going to win that game with the fourth liners like playing the bulk of the game in the third period. They weren't coming back from a 2-goal deficit against anybody. So like he did that. He put off that game for hopefully for future growth. But and even at a recent season ticket holder meeting, Torts was asked about Tampa, and he goes, listen, there's some similarities, but they had some really more talented guys. And he mentioned, you know, Brad Richards, and I covered that cup, and
Vinny and Marty,
like you, the Flyers have maybe half of that kind of talent. So he understands he doesn't have that yet. And look, he's putting the heat, he's turning the heat up on Chuck Fletcher tremendously, to the point where, you know, you might see a change there at some point where Chuck moves up in the front office and they get somebody else, because he's basically telling us every other week he doesn't have the right personnel. Yeah. And so they're making small moves. They picked up Evan Barrett today. I don't think it's going to matter on the NHL roster. But Torts is doing a good job instilling what he wants to instill. But he still, there's 50% of me that doesn't like what he does. And so in the example, like with Kevin Hayes and Konecny, never says what the problem is. Doesn't tell the media, so the fans don't know. The next day, he brings up again. He's like, yeah, this is kind of like at the office stuff. We've all moved on. But it's like the fans haven't moved on. They still don't know why you did it. It's good to talk about having a standard, but if you never explain your standard, how's somebody supposed to get excited about, you know, the team that you're running when you don't know, right? So they don't fill up. Flyers fans don't like being kept in the dark. Right now, Cam Atkinson, they're being kept in the dark. You know, they're saying, Torts is saying, we hope it's not month to month, but Flyers fans have PTSD from Ryan Ellis.
Yeah.
And it's not Ryan Ellis's fault. He's a great guy. But just the way the injuries were and the lack of communication, it's happening again. So, like, you know, maybe a week ago or 4 or 5 days ago, Torts is like, I don't think it's month to month with Cam Atkinson. Well, guess what? At the end of the month, it's month to month. So it's going to be month to month. And so, and he has barely practiced, and he was in one preseason game, right? So there's a worry there, because Atkinson has an injury history too. Yeah. Like, they knew that when they traded for him. In retrospect, was it bad that they traded Voracek? Yeah, it probably was. I mean, Atkinson is a goal scorer, and Philly fans love him, but it's like any other player. You've got to be able to play. If you're not playing, then you eventually are going to lose that trade. And so hopefully Atkinson can get back in the lineup. With what they have now, I mean, he's fallen in love with the fourth liners. He thinks Zach McEwen's going to score more. Like, he's just not. You had a better chance of scoring more. You did score more. So, but you did the other role too. Like, Zach just doesn't have the hands.
No.
He doesn't.
No.
And so, you know, like, he had a line with McEwen and Delorier and Sedlak out there. All of a sudden, Sedlak, you know, he gets picked up off the scrap heap, and he's one of Torts' guys, and he's in there, man, and he's talking them up. And they had like a 3-on-2. They had no chance of scoring in the third period. You know what I mean? It's like, I get it. You're showing the team that their work ethic is worthy of your attention. But the problem is, we're not in a work ethic league anymore. Talent wins out. Speed wins out. And they're lacking a little bit of both.
A couple things. I watched Zach McEwen play last year. He plays hard. He's tough. He'll do anything for his team. He's a great guy to have around. The one thing with Torts is he's so stubborn that he'll do it just to do it.
Yeah.
And just to prove a point. My concern is when he starts calling out personnel and stuff like that with a GM, that's stuff you do behind closed doors. That's stuff, especially when you're there right away.
I don't even know if he's doing it half the time, but he's doing it.
Yeah. They're 4-2. Give me a reason why they continue to play well. And if they come back, what's the reason you see for a fall off and they fall out of contention?
Well, the reason they're doing well is goaltending. Carter Hart's doing great. Although if you look at his expected goals, he's the leader in the league. Like, it's just, you know, he's playing well above what anybody could hope he could do. So he's been leveling the playing field, and Felix Sandstrom's done a nice job too, even though he's still winless as a pro, which is hard. But he's a young kid, right? So, okay. So you have that. They have bought into the system. So there's definitely a battle there that wasn't there before. There's still too much fighting. Like, I'm sorry. There's just, they overdo it. I don't want it to be slapshotish. And at times it turns out to be that way when they're down in games, but you know, you play against the right team like Nashville. Sure. They're going to throw down with you all the time. But again, they have guys sometimes fighting that you don't want to fight. You know, like at this day and age, should Justin Braun be fighting? No. He should never, ever, ever be in a fight. Right. So guys sometimes, and you've seen this under Torts, do too much to get his attention, to get on his good side. And so you worry about that. They're winning puck battles, but they're not winning them because they're getting to the puck first. That's another problem. Another problem is faceoffs. They're kind of a bad faceoff team right now. Power play. Listen, Tony DeAngelo is great at handling the puck, and he scores a lot 5-on-5. He's not shooting a lot on the power play, and he really needs to, because the one thing when Provorov was playing right, and he's playing right again, he just puts the shot out there, right? He just throws the shot on the net, this is a wrist shot, and lets whatever happens going to happen. And D'Angelo's got a much more dynamic shot. But again, it's like the old Shane Gostisbehere thing. You've got to keep shooting it and getting it on net. Otherwise, Torts is going to go to Provorov because he's going to be like, look, I got to get, you know, the guy who gets it on net, that's the guy I care about. And so that's something D'Angelo, I think, is, for lack of a better term, gripping the stick a little bit, because he's playing at home against with the home crowd there. And he's, you know, he's played some good games, but he's played some bad games. And I think that's something. I don't think he's a top pairing defenseman, I'll be honest. I think the whole world knows that he probably isn't, but they don't have a lot of options. So right now, that's what they're playing. That's where they're going to get beat. Because, and again, even at center, if Couturier is out for another 2 weeks or whatever, they're going to lose ground. Kevin Hayes can't play the number one center spot. Yes. He really can't. And so that's where they're sort of getting beat. You go up against the wrong teams. Like next week, they are going to have a back-to-back against the Rangers and the Leafs. Good luck with that.
Yeah. Tony D'Angelo isn't the number one guy. And slotting is so important for just teams in general being great. I always refer to everything in Detroit. Everything in my arsenal is going back to Detroit. Because you take a fourth line like, you know, Maltby and McCarty and Draper. Well, those guys become free agents. Buffalo signing them. Hey, McCarty, you're on our second line. Maltby, you're on third line center. And they're like, oh my God, why the fuck aren't these guys any good anymore? Well, because they were surrounded and slotted playing against other teams' third line defense pairs, other teams' fourth line lines. They dominated them. It's the old Ville Leino and Christian Eroff coming to Buffalo. Oh my God, we're going to give you $40 million and $30 million. Why aren't you guys performing anymore?
Hey, listen, I think Ville Leino's built his like clothing empire off the Sabres money.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I actually grabbed him by the throat one night. I guess I have a customary way of doing that. We were at a bar. It was the catwalk for Ryan Miller's charity. And after, he came up to me and he's like, points his finger, and he's not a big guy. He looks like a DJ.
Yeah.
And he points his finger, and we're in Buffalo, and he points his finger right in my chest. He goes, "Who the fuck are you think you are talking on ESPN about me?" And I'm like, "Dude, we gave you $27 million. You have no goals through 56 games. What do you want me to say? It's a great signing?"
Right. Like, you can't.
Come on, dude. I go, "Now get your fucking finger out of my chest or I'm going to fucking kill you."
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Claude Giroux made him a player. Like, Claude Giroux got him his points, and it didn't translate. I'll tell you who my answer was for that, Christian Dvorak. I kept telling anybody who would listen, he's not a second-line center. Yeah. Montreal's making a mistake here. They're paying too much money. He's a third-line center. He's a good third-line center, but he can't play second. And I think sometimes people have a hard time understanding just the difference in matchups, jumping up for one line like that, what it means, going up, who you're going up against. And, you know, to me, it's always like against when you're on the road and the other team has the last change at home, you're going up against their top two lines, man. Good luck.
And that's the thing. I'd say just the common fan, when you're in the game and you follow the game like you and you know the game, and as a player, I'm like, okay, at home, we got this matchup. I get
right.
Like, let's just go 98 playoffs. When I played top two lines and I played power play, I'm like, oh, fuck, a little easier at home when we got last change.
Right.
As opposed to being on the road going against their top 40. Yeah. A lot easier playing against the guy that can't turn to his left.
Yeah.
A lot easier.
So, oh, yeah.
That's the big thing in hockey.
And that's what the Flyers are suffering with their defense, too, because their top four is okay, average to below average. You know, Justin Braun can play a little bit still. He's on the bottom pair, but they got Nick Seeler, whose best move is to grab somebody by the throat like you did. But, you know, he's horse collaring him. He's getting 2 minutes for everything. He can't play defense. And so, but Torts likes him because, he fights. So, okay. So, but that's a problem. And that is going to be a problem for them on the road because the other teams are going to match up their best lines against their bottom pairing and against their top pairing. Because again, Provorov's really good. D'Angelo, you know, if he's pinching too much and you go up against that wrong pairing, you're going to have a problem. And so that's where they're going to start to drop, I think, in the standings. They're getting some players back. Owen Tippett looks like he'll be back Thursday. He's not wearing a tinted visor anymore. But, you know, here's something I had said about Owen Tippett. I went back and looked, and I had him really highly rated in the draft, and I said, great shot, everything else. He still is a great shot, but the problem is, when he thinks about it, he takes about a half a second too much to shoot it. When he just does it mechanically, someone gets him the puck, shoots it, it goes right in. Like, it's instant. It's instantaneous, but if you put him on the power play, that's not always the case. He's gotten a little better as far as passing, and he can get to the net a little bit, but they need him to score goals. If he doesn't score between 15 and 20 goals a year, getting him for Claude Giroux is not worth it. Like, that's the way fans are going to look at it.
Yeah.
That's the way the world's going to look at it. And what I didn't understand is, you know, Claude Giroux once got a shooting coach because everybody kept yelling at him like they're yelling at Barzal, like all of a sudden you're going to make Matt Barzal a scorer. Like, he's a playmaker. He's not scoring more than 20 goals a year. But Giroux used to have a pretty bad shot, and he went to a shooting coach, and he got it up to the point where I think one year he had like 28 goals, something like that, maybe even 30. And it worked for him. I don't believe the Flyers got a shooting coach for Tippett. So right now in this year, you know, he got hurt, so I give him a chance to come back and find his legs. But he's still doing the same things to me, and it's inconceivable. It's like, if I could see this,
yeah,
how could they not see it? So I don't know, man. Like, that's a talent that could just go by the wayside. You know, there's guys with great shots in the league, but it doesn't mean it's going to go in.
Absolutely, and I coached against him in the OHL when he was with Mississauga. Their power play was unbelievable, but he had that extra half second down there. He had McLeod, and he had Hag on defense, and they had a lethal power play. I ran the PK, and we didn't have a lot of we were almost like towards like our personnel. Now, I did it behind closed doors, but I'd look at Jay McKee and go, our fucking personnel is not very good. They wanted to play this junior B kid on the PK.
So you needed to put Jay McKee out there to block shots on the PK.
Absolutely. I put him out there without equipment. I love that guy so much. But yeah, Owen Tippett has an elite shot, but at that level, you got to get it off quicker.
Yes.
And he's got the power. He doesn't need a lot of wind-up time to get it on. He just needs the space and a little bit of separation.
Yes.
Curious guy to watch, and we'll get into prospects because I know I watch you. I've talked to you about so many guys over the years. Before we get to that, I wanted to ask, Vancouver or Boston? Bigger surprise, Boston at 6-1 or Van at 0-5-2, and where it was Bruce, there it is. Is it Bruce, you might be gone soon?
Yeah, I think the bigger surprise is Vancouver. I did pick the Bruins to make the playoffs when they started. When they got Grizzlick back, I was like, okay, I think they could weather the storm here. Now they've done way better than weathering the storm because I like Montgomery too. I always felt bad for his story, what happened. Yep. I watched him a lot in college. He's a winner.
He's a great dude.
Yeah. So I knew he would be successful, and I figured they could at least play 500 until they got McAvoy back and Marshawn back, right? So, by the way, Marshawn in that Pooh Bear jersey, it almost made him look human.
Like, yeah, almost. Yeah.
I just want to point that
almost.
Out. Almost. But the thing is with Vancouver, their defense is just brutal. It's maybe the worst in the NHL. Like, we knew OEL was out of tread, and I don't know why they didn't see that, but they didn't see it. So that was a mistake. Myers is out. He'll help. No, he's back now. Myers is back, but he'll help him a little bit. Tyler Myers isn't terrific on that team. Okay. He's an upgrade for what they have, but they are just so bad in their own zone. It's just unbelievable. And their power play is not doing as well as you'd hope. And Boudreau, when he was through town here, was already complaining about the power play. Like, listen, we got to get goals because he knows he has to outscore the opposition. Demko is a terrific goalie. I know him well and his family
awesome.
Well. But he feels like he's got, I could tell the way he's playing, he feels like he has to, he can't let up more than one goal a game. And that's a tough way to sort of play. And a lot of times he's taken chances to, you know, try and get a shutout, try and limit the other team because he sees his defense isn't doing it. And I think that's the biggest problem. Also JT Miller. So he had an outburst here in Philly because, you know, he had been on the ice for like the first 8 goals of the season, right? JT Miller at center. That's what they paid him for. They've already moved him off the center. So now you've probably overpaid him by $1.5 million or $2 million a year if he's not going to be a successful center for you. That's the biggest problem with Vancouver is their cap management and the money that they spend and their player development. Player development's lousy.
If you don't have development, you got nothing.
Yeah. I mean, look at the Sabres. Look at the difference in the Sabres. That's half the difference.
The Sabres, the Sens, the people that they have running. Like, I watched the Sens up closely, and I played golf with Pierre Dorion a few weeks ago. Went to the game the other day. Man, they're electric. A guy that I missed on, Josh Norris. I thought he'd be a third-line center. He is a true second-line center. Now, his skating is elite.
Unfortunately, he's out for the year now, but his skating is elite. You're right.
But I always thought he'd be a third when they made that trade, and that trade is just that's the gift that keeps on giving. That's unbelievable. But, yes, the Sabres. Look at Dahlin right now.
Yeah.
5 goals in 5
I talked about him
games.
On Sirius yesterday. Like, Dahlin, you know, look, truth be told, I talked to Shel Samuelson. His daughter works for the Flyers, so I know the Samuelsons. I've met the family. I know Matias a little bit.
Yeah.
But I still know what kind of player he is, and Dahlin is way better with Samuelson than with anybody else. That's obvious, and that's been a big thing. And even now, with Samuelson out, Dahlin's got the confidence he didn't have under Kruger because Kruger wanted him to be like a matchup guy, too, and a shutdown guy, and he's not that guy.
No.
And that was the worst. Right. That was the worst thing that Kruger did was that. So now Dahlin feels like, hey, I know when to pinch. He's scoring goals up the middle. He set the record for defenseman, 5 goals in 5 games. That's not a fluke. He's elite now.
He went first overall, not because he's a shutdown guy.
Right.
Like
right.
Like you're not drafting Hutchinson with Detroit to have him be passive because he's a massive or to play back and play in secondary, like use them to their strengths. That's the whole key. I'm with you. I'm with you and prospects, you know, I don't even know. There's a lot of things like you're a chameleon. You could talk any subject. I feel like I can talk anything. I can go any sport, any which way I follow most of them. I'd say baseball is probably my least, football, my most, obviously hockey is easy, but the prospects projecting for me, NFL, guys are 22, 23 years old. We have essentially 4 first-round picks as a Jets fan, and we know them all. We know where we think they're going to slide and have immediate impact. We look at first overall picks in Slafkovsky and fourth overall in Wright.
Yeah.
Listen, I still think the AHL, I love junior hockey, but we have kids that are ready to play in the AHL that are too good for the OHL or any junior league that are really stuck in the middle. I think that has to change going forward. I'd love to get your perspective on that because they aren't allowed to play in the AHL where they can develop. And we have a guy like Shane Wright that won't even be in the lineup on some nights, and they have to make a decision on what they're going to do. He can't go back to junior because he can't put him back there. What are your thoughts on that and the young kids that are making a step this year into the NHL?
Yeah, so we'll start with Shane Wright. I mean, I know Dave Haxtell. He covered here in Philly. He had good moments and he had bad moments. I knew him, you know, as a college coach too. He's obtuse, man. He says one thing and he does something else. So like one night when Shane Wright was playing well in his eyes and almost scored, he's like, hey, I got to get him more minutes. So he went from 6 minutes to 8 minutes. Two nights later, he scratched again. What yeah. they are doing is a horrible thing. I once ripped Barry Melrose on my website when he was doing this with Steve Stamkos, and he was playing like a 40-year-old line with like Gary Roberts and Mark Recchi, and I forget who the third one was. And Melrose was tickled with that line, and he didn't care that he was not playing Stamkos. Once he got fired, all of a sudden Rick Tocchet started playing Steve Stamkos, and Steve Stamkos turned into Steve Stamkos.
Well, he scored like 20 goals in the second half after, right. I think Barry lasted 13 or 16 games. I love right. Barry the analyst. I don't love Barry the coach.
No. So this is the same thing happening again with Shane Wright. It's like, you can't play him 6 minutes a night. And look, he's not even a minus. Like, the problem is Dave Haxtell he's very rigid, and he's a guy that is like, listen, you've got to be a certain way and you got to slot in a certain way. And Shane Wright's not necessarily that guy.
Yeah.
You have to let him play, give him 12 minutes. You'll see he's smart. He, you know, that whole thing about not giving his all on shifts was a lot of baloney. What would that, a lot of times, and they said it about Owen Power too. And what Owen Power would do is he would get into the offensive zone and get the puck and take a second and break down what's going on the ice and find the open guy. That's what Shane Wright was doing all last year, because he told me he wanted to make his teammates better, because that was the way he was going to win in that league. Yeah. And he didn't have the most talented team. It seems like for whatever reason, you know, people didn't get that. Fine. But at the NHL level, he definitely can get it. But whether he's going to, I don't know. What I think the plan is, you know how you can go 40 games until you have to burn the first year of entry level. So they're going to keep milking this along, play a couple, sit a couple. They'll put him in the World Juniors. If he does well, they'll bring him back. And if he doesn't, then they'll send him down. I think that's what the game plan is. And I don't love it.
Yeah, I don't love that either. Do you think these guys should have the opportunity? I think we have to change, or I mean, you watch a lot of junior hockey. I mean, it's great for evaluation, but those guys have already been evaluated. And I know I know it doesn't make our junior hockey better. It makes it significantly worse, and makes that it is a business as well down there. But is it time to maybe make an exception for certain guys, certain level, whether you have one or two prospects that can come out that kind of fall between the cracks because they're too good for junior?
Yeah, I don't mind doing that. If you want to say to every AHL team, you could have two of those guys, I think it would be good. I mean, the AHL is a developmental league. Like, that's what it is. And there are a lot of guys getting caught in the middle now. I wish that would change. Matt Savoy is a perfect guy in your area. He's really close to the NHL. He's just going to dominate juniors for another year. But
yeah,
he doesn't need to be playing in junior hockey right now. He doesn't. And he did great in camp. Everybody was raving about Matt Savoy. He was another guy, you know, teams passed on him because of his size. Fine. They'll pay the price later. But yeah, I do feel like the AHL needs to change that. And I don't know why they haven't.
Hopefully coming soon. I don't see it. There is a big business on both ends. And I understand junior hockey is so important.
Yeah, you want to sell tickets. I get it.
And I get it. It's the biggest feeder system for us. I know it's changed dramatically over the years, and we get people from all over, players from all over. Russ, you have been unbelievable. I want to get you on again. Obviously, anytime. we are just basking right now in New York Jets, but you guys,
it may not get any better than this season. Like, this may be the high point.
I know, and that's kind of why I have you on right now.
I'm gonna be there this week, so like, hopefully I'm not the jinx.
Yeah, no, I'm gonna put you on the spot. I think it's 2 points right now. I haven't checked yet today. I checked yesterday. Do they win? Do they beat our foe?
Yes, they're winning this game. I think they're winning by, like, you know, 5 points. I don't think they're blowing them out, because I think Belichick will pull some stunts and it'll confuse Wilson. And I think they'll get some turnovers, because they do. I'm not worried about New England's running game like I used to be worried about them. And they only have, you know, Jacoby Myers is really their only good receiver that you have to really worry about. If they put sauce on him, I don't think a lot of guys are getting open. So I feel good about this game.
I saw the interview today with Saleh, and what the fuck Belichick is doing with Zappe and Jones. I no clue. That absolutely no clue.
He's pulling it out of his ass. He's making it up.
It's a guy you respect so much, and you're like, oh my god, like he knows all the answers.
Right.
Tom Brady's not walking through that door right now, and now you got to. Now he's causing like disbelief in both these. Like it's almost like, okay, now Zappe's my guy, right? And Jones, and Jones is your first round pick. Like Jones is a guy that you were raving about, and this guy was the next coming. This was your next Tom Brady. Now
this is your genius pick. Like you know, you picked him over others. This is your great pick.
I'm with you. I think the Jets win. I think I get my over, but this could be the highlight after this week. Russ, thank you. Tell everyone where we can read you, where we can see you, where we can listen to you. Okay. And thank you for coming on Unfiltered.
Yeah, appreciate it. So Tuesdays, 12:15 on Sirius. Sportsology.com is my website. EliteProspects.com is where I write all my prospect stuff. So this year I've already interviewed like Adam Fantilli, just interviewed Charlie Strammel. That'll go up there. So I get, by the time the year's done, I've interviewed a lot of the top prospects, usually like 80 or higher percent, a lot of the first rounders. So that's where that work is. Full Press Sports is another. FullPressSports.com is, I write some hockey for them, prospect work, and I do baseball. Like I have a baseball column there so they can catch that. Locked On Flyers is a podcast that I do daily. So that's something where I keep up with all the Flyers action. And then, we do Off the Post, which is on SoundCloud right now. It's on the Russ Cohen SoundCloud page. We get a lot of views and listens on that. And we just kind of mix it up. It's kind of like three guys go in there. We talk about, we generally talk about the Metro, and then we broaden it out.
Okay.
And a lot of times we'll have a food take too. I'm like a pumpkin spice hater. And so things like that. So we get into other talk there too, but that's what I do. I try and make a living out of it.
The Chameleon. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it, Matt. Thanks for being on, Russ. I appreciate it. Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby is sponsored by Bet99 Sportsbook. Every game starts at Bet99. We are responsible gambling, Ontario only. Like and subscribe to this podcast. Russ, you are the man. I will talk to you soon. JETS.
Jets, Jets, Jets.
There we fucking go. Cheers, buddy.